I have a personal announcement, though. I'm placing a personal bounty on the head of Tim McCracken. He's the coach and chief punk on that Syracuse team.
A bounty?
Yeah. $100 of my own money for the first of my men that really nails that creep. That's 8 o'clock at the War Memorial, the Syracuse, and the all-new Charleston Chiefs.
Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, not to worry, kid.
Welcome to the Drop Podcast. I'm your host, Lance Descott. I am so excited today to get to talk about Round 3, Game 1 between the St. Louis Blues and the San Jose Sharks. It's been a long time for both teams, but especially the Blues. The Blues have not been in the third round, the Western Conference Finals, since 2001 when they played Colorado. San Jose has been there recently in 2011. San Jose has been there three times in their existence, but never gotten to the Stanley Cup. The Blues have been there several times in their existence, including 68, 69, and 70. They were there in 88 and 2001, but they have never reached the Stanley Cup. Today, we're going to be going over some key storylines. We're going to be going over some stats of the leaders within the playoffs from Sharks coach Peter DeBoer, and also Sharks player Tommy Wingles, and we'll hear from Ken Hitchcock's press conference, and also some Blues players during a press conference. This is going to be a great series, regardless of whether you're a San Jose Shark fan or if you're a Blues fan. It's going to be awesome. This is going to be a long, tough series. I hope both fans are ready for this. Let's go ahead and get into some stats that we can look at, too, from both teams and some history, so that we know what we're getting into as fans here for this series. I'm sure the players already know, and I think most fans do too. But let's go ahead and get into this. Look at, like I said, I talked about the Blues and San Jose's history when it comes to the finals of their conferences. We can also talk about the Blues playing San Jose three games this year in the regular season. San Jose actually won twice at the Blues' own arena at Scott Trade Center, and the Blues won once in San Jose on March 22nd, 1-0. That was a very, very close game. This game one will take place tomorrow evening at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, Missouri. Game time is 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central. It'll be on NBC Sports Network, CBC, and TVA Sports. This is going to be, like I said earlier, a great series. Let's look at some key points here. You know, we've got two pretty good point-producing defensemen, and actually one really great one, and that would be Brent Burns. He is great. He's been great this playoffs. He's really stepped up his game. He's been good all year, but he's really stepped up his game for the Sharks. And then we've got Kevin Shattenkirk of the Blues. Burns leads all defensemen with 15 points in 12 playoff games, and he is key to their attack and will be against the Blues and Brian Elliott. He's taken 43 shots on goal this postseason, an average of about 3.5 to 4 a game. Shattenkirk's not as flashy as him and doesn't shoot quite as much. Shattenkirk has 10 points in 14 games, and he's second behind Burns in playoff points left. Shattenkirk has 31 shots on goal, so he's a little bit less. And the Blues have played more games than San Jose has. The Blues have played, of course, 14 games, and San Jose's played 12. It's going to be a power versus power type of game. Both power plays are pretty good, and the Blues' power play is really good. You can probably expect, a lot of shots. There's some key players for both teams, Pavelski, Thornton, and, of course, Burns. And you got Jones in goal for San Jose, who's been playing really, really well. And don't forget, the Sharks have their new mascot, Joe Pawowski, Pawowski, as they call him. He ran out in one of the games against Nashville, the game one, I believe, and now everybody is just talking about him so much. And they actually put him in a local animal shelter, and they have a camera there, and they're watching him, and Shark fans can look in on him, which I think is pretty neat. The Blues, you know, you've got some veterans and people like Bouwmeester and Backes, and you've also got people like Brouwer, who came over from Chicago, who's been huge in the playoffs when it comes to being a leader and putting goals in. He won the series for them against Chicago in the first round and looked great against the Stars. Then you've got rookie Robbie Fabry, who has just looked like a veteran. He's 20 years old and I believe 113 or 114 days, and one of the youngest players to have as many points as he does. I believe he's got 10 assists and 3 or 4 goals. So he's looked really, really, really good. You know, he's tied up a lot of times with Vladimir Tarasenko on the same line. And, you know, they're all looking good. Tarasenko has got the 4th best total points of the postseason. He's equal to Pavelski, so those kind of two even each other out. Fabry was a first-round pick of the Blues in 2014 and just has looked great. But San Jose has a pretty good rookie this year, too, in left-winger Jonas Donskoi. That's hard to pronounce. He's got 7 points in a dozen games, so we've all got our rookies here, you know, both San Jose Sharks and the Blues. The Blues, of course, have Brian Elliott, as they call the Moose, in goal. And the Sharks have Jones, which, like I said, has played pretty well. I don't think Jones has faced as many shots as Elliott. In fact, I know he hasn't. Elliott is the goalie left right now who's faced the most shots. Jones, I don't think, really faced some high-scoring teams when it came to Nashville or when it came to, excuse me, the Kings. He's a good goalie, but I don't think he's faced as many shots. And here's how I look at it. I think the Blues have, overall, when lines 1-4, have better forwards. I think the defense and toughness is kind of a wash. You know, even though, you know, we got Shattenkirk and then we got Burns coming, for San Jose. I think that's pretty even. Goaltending, I'm going to have to give the edge to the Blues, but this is a very, very even series. You can't look back on what the players did in the regular season. You got to look at what they're doing in the postseason. And if the Blues can keep the shots down and, you know, clear out the rebounds if Elliott gives them up, that's going to be key. But the key to me for San Jose is Burns. How Burns goes, I believe, is how the Sharks will go. It's going to come down to that, I believe. He is just a huge key. You know, Thornton's a little getting older. Burns just keeps putting the puck on the net all the time, constantly. I mean, if you watch Game 7 against Nashville, it was like every time he'd get the puck, he'd shoot it. And a lot of people say, well, he was stingy. No, he had the right to shoot that puck because he was in the best position to shoot it. And we need more of that from a rookie of ours, Parayko. You know, and Parayko's going to be a key, too. How he plays and steps up, because he stepped up in round 1 and 2. And the Blues have always wanted him to be the type of guy like Burns has been and putting the puck on the net. And we need more of that. We need that from Pietrangelo. But, you know, like I said earlier, this is going to be a tough, tough series. Let's go ahead and let's hear what Tommy Wingles has to say about the series and what he thinks about the Blues. It was an interview, I believe, after the last game with Nashville. Let's get into that right now.
Yeah, Tarasenko's a great player. That Fabry's got some skill. You know, they have some guys who are bigger and move pretty well as well. So it's something we've got to be aware of, you know, taking time and space away from those guys and try to control the play on our end.
What's the key against Tarasenko?
Yeah, limited space. You know, these guys, real skilled players, want time and space with the puck. So if you can kind of limit him as best you can, that's what you try to do. You know, good players are going to be good players regardless, even if you try to shut him down. So I'm sure he'll get some opportunities, but it's about us limiting those and trying to keep him maybe to the outside rather than the center of the ice.
Have you had a chance to do much film study of these guys or just meetings?
A little bit of both. You know, I think everyone in this room, coaches included, have been watching other games throughout the playoffs. Yeah. So we're all very familiar with the Blues. You know, like you said, we played them a few times throughout the year. We know, you know, their personnel. We know how they want to play. So we will continue to touch up on what they like to do and their tendencies. But ultimately, this series is about how we play. You know, not about how they play.
Time to recapture that road. I mean, last series was so strange, you know, all home team was.
It is, but that's the playoffs. You know, you're expected to win at home and hold serve. So, you know, if we can go in and continue winning games on the road, we'll be very happy.
How would you describe Brett's playing style? What has he brought to the mix?
Wild.
But, you know, he's kind of in a good way. You know, he's all over the ice. You know, I think maybe in years past, it's too wild, but you know, he knows when to jump in. He knows when to be aggressive. I think he's very good defensively, and he's hard to play against. You know, guys don't like going against him in the corner. You know, both as forwards going against him, and when he's carrying the puck out, up the ice, you know, defensemen playing against him. So he's a huge asset for us. He's a mismatch every time he gets out on the ice, and you know, I'm happy to have on our team and not have to play against a guy like that.
Seems like he and Paul cook pretty well.
Pardon me?
Seems like he and Paul cook.
Yeah, you know, Paulie, they work well with each other. You know, I think Paulie settles him down at times, and Brent knows that Paul's there to have his back. You know, he's very good positionally. He talks a lot. And he makes Brent feel very comfortable. So they formed a very good duo, and they're relied upon heavily, you know, throughout the playoffs here.
Have you gone into St. Louis?
Maybe you want to coach.
Does that help at all?
You know, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, playoffs are different. Each game is its own battle. So do you look at film throughout the year against them? Absolutely. But in terms of results, you know, both teams are playing well at this point, you know, and like I said, playoffs are a whole different ballgame, so I wouldn't read too much into the regular season record.
That was Tommy Wingles of the San Jose Sharks talking about the series with the Blues, their history against each other in the regular season, and what it's going to be like playing them in the playoffs. Before we get into the press conference with the Blues players, with Backes and Elliott and Brower, let's go over a few stats when it comes to goals, points, plus minus, so on and so forth. Logan Couture has got 17 points, and Brent Burns has 15. Tarasenko, as I said, is matching Pavelski with 13, and Robbie Fabry of the Blues also has 13. Goals, we've got Joe Pavelski with 9, Logan Couture with 7, Tarasenko has got 7, Backes has got 6, and that's the way that looks. Pavelski, of course, like I said, has 9. Assist Burns, of course, with all those shots he puts on goal. I mean, he's just relentless. He's got 11 assists. Logan Couture, you know, has got 10 assists. Robbie Fabry's got 10. So Robbie Fabry's pretty close to Burns. And then Jaden Schwartz of the Blues also has 8. When it comes to plus minus, we've got Patrick Berglund at plus 9. And also we have Alex Pietrangelo at plus 6. With looking to goaltending, we've got Martin Jones of San Jose has a 2.16 goals against. Brian Elliott has a 2.29. So those are basically a wash. But like I said, I don't think Jones has faced near as many shots. Save percentage, Elliott has a higher one than Jones. They're pretty close. Elliott's 0.929. Jones is 0.918. So that's pretty dang close. Wins, Brian Elliott has 8. And, you know, he is tied with Jones. So they both got the same amount of wins. When it comes to shutouts, Brian Elliott has 1 and Jones has 1. So, you know, when you look at the goalie thing, I think the Blues have the edge. But if you look at the stats, they're pretty dang close. This is going to be a very, very close series. Let's go ahead and get back to the press conferences. And let's hear from the Blues players, Brian Elliott, David Backes, and also Brower.
Playing well at home and using the same game that we've seen on the road?
Well, if you exclude my first answer by in your question, it's tough to answer. It is just simplify. It's not try to put on a highlight show reel goal for each time we get into the zone. We got to get it deep and get on the grind and make sure that it's tough for them to get out of their zone. And that's the way we score goals and have success, and that's the way we keep them out of our zone and off the attack that they're going to try to bring.
Oh, you want me to? Okay. We play a simple game to begin with. Ooh, I got to find my distance here. We play a simple game to begin with, and we really simplify it on the road. We stress on key points of getting pucks behind them, you know, getting out of our zone quick and clean. And at home, not that we get away from that, but we try and make a couple more plays. You know, you're always going to be a little bit more comfortable in your building, trying to make plays, trying to create a little bit more. And that's something that we have to recognize a little bit better when we're at home, when those plays are there to be made and when they're not.
Either one of you guys, what changes in this round now? You just saw two teams that obviously thrive on transition. Do you have to be mindful of their size and speed, combination of both?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're high potency offenses, just like the previous two opponents that we played. They've got guys that can join from the back end, and then they may be a little bit more zone time oriented with, you know, Thornton down low and the Pavelski line, that those guys rag the puck, then they get Burns swooping in from the point, and all the offense that those guys can create once they're in the zone. That being said, you know, what we talked about already, and getting pucks deep and making them come 200 feet, then you're a little bit more tired when they get in the zone to occupy it for extended times, and that's our focus. And when we're in the zone, you know, there are some big bodies, there are some quick guys, and the combination of that makes it a little bit tough, but we've fared pretty well throughout, and then when we screw up, that's what Els is for.
David, I know you feel like there's a lot left to do, but I'm wondering if you could just take a minute now and kind of talk a little bit about what it means to be on this stage here for you personally and for this team.
Well, it's my 10th year in St. Louis, 10th year in the league, and this is my first time to this stage of the tournament and being one of the final four teams to win a Stanley Cup. It's kind of vindication and rewarding for a lot of the work that's been put in here to build this team from, you know, a rebuild when I was first getting into the league to some real struggles in a first round, you know, in three consecutive years to, you know, some changes to the core, some new faces, some, you know, new ownership 5 years ago or whatever it was. And all that seemingly has come to a place now where it's making it all worth those struggles and those lessons that we've had to learn the hard way to now, you know, be able to get a chance to do what we've set out to do for the last 10 years. And all those, you know, all the meetings and all the time and struggles we've had have led us to this point, to where now we've got, you know, 8 wins to win a cup, but we got to take them one at a time.
Thank you. This is for any of you guys, I guess, but Patrick Berglund in the last 14 games, 4 goals, 4 assists. For him to be having such a strong playoff run despite that injury earlier in the season, what's been the biggest difference, or why has he been able to be so successful thus far?
You're doing well.
Well, Bergie's a big body that, you know, with the injury he had for the first half of the year, it's tough to jump into the middle of a season, I can imagine, to get up to pace and get your legs under you and join the rest of the group. That being said, he started off pretty hot, and then there's a little lull. But I think he's probably benefiting right now from not having a full season of, you know, the grind of what you go through and the energy lapses and all the stuff that, you know, an 82-game season would bring you. That being said, you know, I think the last 2 games against Dallas were some of the best hockey I've seen him play in his career that I've been here for, you know, every single game of it. And when his big frame gets a puck and he's skating well and he's determined, I know from experience and practice it's tough to take it from him, it's tough to defend. And with him going the way he's going right now, we continue that. He's just another asset and another weapon in the arsenal for us to have.
David, 15 different players have scored a goal thus far here in the playoffs. Troy, you can answer this too. But was this a theme throughout the course of the season, you think, of this many players contributing to your success, or is this a matter of a number of guys stepping up in crunch time?
Go ahead. You know, I think it shows the depth of our team. You need those support players in key roles to have success, and you've heard people talk about it in other series as well, and we're no different. It is a lot of the games, our support players are the ones that have pushed us through games, pushed us through series. Those contributions are huge because every team's top line, every team's top D pair is always going to be matched up against, and it's tough for those guys sometimes to break through. You need them to be your best players regardless of whether they're on the score sheet or not, but you need other contributions from other players to make sure that you're pushing yourself through. And Another thing that I think contributes to that too is the amount of injuries that we've had throughout the course of the regular season. It's put a lot of guys in different roles that maybe they weren't slotted in at the beginning of the season. And so for them to be able to get confidence, build their game, build the trust of the coaching staff and the other players, it gives them that experience and that confidence. So when you do get into situations like this where you need guys to step up, even if they're only playing, 10, 12 minutes a night, and they can be effective offensively and defensively as well.
Brian, what's this run been like for you with even runs like this in the regular season and then rolling it into the postseason, but just the whole process of knowing game in, game out, what you're prepping for?
It's been exciting. It's something you wake up in the morning and you just try to have that same winning feeling, and when you come to the rink, everybody kind of leaves you alone and lets you do your thing, and which is probably true for a lot of goalies around the league. But it's something that you work hard your whole career for. You become a goalie because you want to be counted on and you want to play kind of every minute of every game and be involved. And when you have that opportunity, you got to seize it and really cherish it. So that's what I'm trying to do, is have fun with it and be the rock for these guys.
Brian, I'm just curious. There's been a lot made out about, the opportunity since you've gotten here, had to wait for a few guys, play behind some other goaltenders. Do you feel like you're more prepared for it now than you were then, or from a mental standpoint, that your game is more prepared to handle this now than maybe it was a few years back?
I think you do your best to learn from every situation and every year. Going through, some struggles or watching from the bench and trying to cheer the guys on a little bit, I think it just, prepares you for that moment when you do that, get that opportunity. I think, especially as a goalie, the experiences are what you learn from, and you have to look at each one as a learning opportunity instead of a negative emotion. And that's what I've tried to focus on, my whole career, is try to be positive every day and get your head down and keep working, and sooner or later it'll work out.
Brian, Hitch said yesterday that he's learned not to talk to goalies, because if he would have talked to Eddie Belfour, he would have hit him over the head with a Sherwood. Have you ever wanted to hit Hitch over the head with a Sherwood?
I'm sure if I used a Sherwood, that would be the case. He's kind of the old school guy where, if you stop the puck, he'll leave you alone. And, I think most of the guys probably want him to leave them alone. So try to do your job and you don't get talked to.
True. Troy, you've obviously played a lot of hockey against David and formed a lot of opinions playing that hockey against him. Has your opinion changed at all since you've come here and played with him?
It's, you're hard pressed to find any bad guys in the NHL. There are a couple, but there's not too many. And playing against Dave, he's a guy that you respect because of his work ethic, how he handles himself, his passion for the game. And so when I came here, all those things were evident right from the beginning, from camp. When I got traded, he was one of the first guys to text me and make sure that I was going to be comfortable in my transition here. The guy away from the rink, you get to know him a little bit more now that I'm playing on his team. But I met him a couple years ago at Washington's practice facility for the Olympics, and we had a brief conversation. But so at least there was a little bit of familiarity personally between me and him. But the way he plays on the ice is evident of a leader. It's somebody that you can follow and somebody that you can trust day in and day out. And got a tear over there.
How much do I owe you for saying all these nice stuff?
But But his play on the ice is everything that I expected when I came here, playing a little bit against him younger in my career. Not so much as of late, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Brian, I'm just curious, from a goalie's perspective, when you're playing in playoffs, it's unique since you're playing anywhere between 4 and 7 games against the exact same team every night. Does that change your preparation at all? Do you think that you have more of an advantage game one since shooters don't know your tendencies, or do you feel more comfortable by the time game 4, game 5 comes around and you know their tendencies?
Ooh, that's a tough question. It's a little bit of a cat and mouse game. I think, they'll be preparing stuff on me and I'm doing the same for them. And, it's really, it comes down as a goalie, it comes down to a lot of how your teammates play in front of you and taking away opportunities from them. And these guys have done that all playoffs long. And, when you're able to kind of focus on, a couple guys or, where, pucks are going to come from on, certain power play situations, and it makes your job a lot easier. So when you can focus on that and I don't know, I'm not going to say who has any type of advantage. It's just you try to work hard and prepare so that, you have that advantage, I guess. But, I can't tell you for sure.
That was Brian Elliott, David Backes, and Troy Brower of the Blues and their thoughts on the series with San Jose. I think they realize, like most of us fans for either team and also the media, that this is going to be a tough-fought series. This isn't going to be, I don't think, a lot of up-and-down open ice, 50 shots, 45 shots a game, and 7-6 and 6-5. I'd be really shocked if it was that kind of a series. But I think we all expect it to be a great series. Let's go ahead and move on, and let's get Coach Ken Hitchcock of the St. Louis Blues' thought on the series and what he thinks is going to happen within the series.
We just feel that from a chemistry standpoint that Letera and Tarasenko and Schwartz have had good chemistry. We used, because of the way Dallas's lines were formulated, we needed a different mix with their first two lines, and we found it. But I think going back, this line combination makes us more comfortable.
Hitch, a couple of the players talked about, you guys had a discussion about playing better at home, and I realize it comes down to playing more simple like you do on the road. What are some ways you can get them to do that, to play simple?
Well, I think it's a lot of this is up to the players. It's not simple. It's one of the problems you have at home is you want to make the next play. And your attitude on the road for every team is a little bit different. And at home, the next play, when the intensity level is as high as it is right now for playoffs, usually gets you in trouble. And we're trying to get the players to understand that the proper play still allows us to continue with puck possession and offensive opportunities, but it's like anything else. When you're at home, you want to play well in front of people. You want to put on a show. And we want the players just to make the proper play, not kind of the next play. The next play gets you thinking in the wrong direction. And I think if we make the proper play and that's our focus, we're going to be in good shape.
Hitch, when you game plan for elite players, what changes when it goes from a guy like Taves and Kane to Ben versus now what you're going to face in San Jose?
Well, you're talking about Pavelski and Thornton and Couture and Marlowe and these guys and Burns. You have to arrive at the assumption that you're not going to push them out. They're elite players for a reason. They're elite players because they're competitive. And they've already proven on the world stage that they're not going to get pushed out. So you're going to have to play well in front of them. I think for any team that plays against good players, you just don't want to give up any easy ice. So for us, whether it was Taves' line, whether it was Ben, we just didn't want to give them any easy ice. And that's going to be the same formula moving forward. I think it's like anything else. If you don't give them the puck as much, then they can't do as much damage as they normally do. And I think from our standpoint, we've we've done a reasonably good job at keeping the puck away from key players. But it's if you think you're going to just go out and check good players and negate them, that's a big mistake, because they're patient and they're competitive and they'll wait for their opportunities. San Jose is a little bit different in that they have chemistry that is so automatic because they've been together for so long that a little mistake can end up being a big mistake. So it's a little bit different than the other lines that we've played against, because they do things 5-on-5 and on the power play that seem unorthodox, but they know each other so well, they find each other. So we're trying to just not give them the puck as much, and hopefully we get a chance to hang on to it.
Coach, what Robbie Fabry's done, everybody talks about how impressive it is. As a coach, I'm curious, is it more impressive skill-wise, or is it more impressive mentally doing it at this stage with the stakes that they are and with him being so young?
Well, I think it's more impressive composure-wise. He hasn't got pushed out emotionally. He's allowed himself to remain composed in critical spots in the games. When the game's on the line, he's played with sound composure. He hasn't panicked. He hasn't got emotionally so revved up that his focus has gotten narrow. I think he's been able to see the ice at critical times in the games, and his competitive composure to me is his greatest asset. He's got obviously good skill, but there's a lot of young players that have good skill. But what he's got going is the composure to make plays under pressure with no panic in his game, which has allowed him to be a good player late in games, and that's why there's so much trust from the coaching staff.
When you say the proper play, does that boil down to putting a lot more pucks on net?
Not necessarily. It means that hockey's a game of finding two-on-ones, and you against good teams, the only way you get to have the puck and maintain possession is find all the little two-on-ones on the ice. The proper play is to find that two-on-one. Where it is, how you find it, it varies every shift by shift. But if you end up playing too much one-on-one, you expose yourself against good teams, because the four teams that are left, you saw it last night with Tampa. Tampa knows how to check. San Jose knows how to check. If you expose the puck too much in one-on-one situations, you're going to get burnt. So the proper play is to understand the whole game of hockey to create offense is find two-on-ones all over the ice. Rush, down low, front of the net, wherever. And that's what we want to do. That's the proper play. And one-on-one hockey is for November and February, not now. You got to find the two-on-ones. You got to create it yourself. You got to work together. And that's what I mean. And sometimes when you want to do so well, you try to do things that are riskier because you want to impress people. And that's a natural tendency for any athlete to do that. And I think if we lower the risk and increase the relationships on the ice to create two-on-ones, we'll be more successful.
Coach, what have you noticed when watching the Sharks power play, and how do you plan to disrupt it?
Well, it's the first power play that during the pregame skate doesn't even have a coach. They just go out one end of the ice and they run the rotations. It's so automatic that they don't even use a coach. They just go on the ice and they have their 10 plays that they run from each side of the ice, and it's just, the motor response is just so automatic because these guys have been together for 5-6 years on the same group of guys. And, I saw it 3 years ago when they came in here, when we played them in the playoffs, every pregame skate, they just ran the power play and nobody went into that end of the ice. They just went down there as a group of five, ran the rotations, left the ice. And that's chemistry. And that's what has been created just by five guys who are very good players being able to play together. And our job is to negate the trigger points, to find out what the trigger points are and negate them. First thing is to stay out of the box. Second thing is to make them work, to make them work harder than they want to work. And they're going to get their licks. They're going to get their chances. We played three hockey games against them this year, and they had 19 scoring chances on the power play in three games. That's way too many. It's too many power plays, too many scoring chances, and we're going to have to eliminate them.
Ken, what are the common traits you see? What are the common traits you see in defensemen like Alex when it comes to their ability to handle workloads when it gets over 30 minutes a night?
Well, I think he's a lot like a lot of young players now who are elite. If you don't play him every second shift, they get bored. And he's a guy that needs to be out on the ice all the time because he's a very intense player. He's a very emotional player, very driven player. And they want him to be difference makers, and they want to be on the ice all the time. And if they're not on the ice all the time, they get bored. And then I think the risk comes into their game, and it doesn't make him effective. I think the more we play him, the better he plays, because he keeps the game very defined, and he understands how to maintain a competitive balance on the ice without exhausting himself. And I think that's what those elite players do. You look at all the top players, they only want to rest one rotation. They don't want to rest two rotations. So they want to be coming out every second time. And he's no different than Doughty. He's no different than Weber. He's no different than Carlson. He's the same type of player that he wants to play those type of minutes for him to get an impact in the game.
Just to follow up, are there things beyond just playing him every other shift that you can do as a coach to help him manage that workload?
Well, I think he has to understand that everything starts from keeping the puck in front of him. When he keeps the puck in front of him, then he's allowed, because of his mobility, to join from underneath. Sometimes when it's a regular season game, he's doing a lot of leading of the rush, and that's when the risk is really high, and it doesn't allow him to be what we think is a proper participant in the game. So by moving the puck first and then joining from behind, he uses his mobility as a real weapon, and that's where he was so effective in the Chicago series. He headmanned the puck quickly, joined from behind, and he became the fourth attacker every game. And it made him very, very effective for us.
That was insight on the series from Blues coach Ken Hitchcock. We learned that the STL line, as they call them, Tarasenko, Stasny, and Laterra, are going to be back together for the series. Hitchcock kind of mixed up some of the lines for the Stars series and played them on some different lines, which worked, you know, for the most part, but I think he's wanting to get them back together because of the way that San Jose plays, and I think they'll benefit from being back together, and hopefully they do if you're a Blues fan, like I am. If you're a Sharks fan and you're listening to this, you probably hope they don't. I know this has been a long show, but I want to thank everybody for sticking on here and listening to it. Our very last interview is going to be with the Sharks coach, Peter DeBoer. It was an interview taken after the practice today, and he had some really good insight on the series. I think he understands it just as well as all of us do, and it's got the same thing as Hitchcock's interview. All of them that we've went over, it's been basically the same thoughts. But let's get into that interview right now with Peter DeBoer.
Thoughts on St. Louis and the challenge that this presents?
Well, every step, to the Stanley Cup is a little tougher, and there's only four teams left. You look at their regular season, 107 points, and dealing with the injuries they dealt with, they probably could have had 115 if they had stayed healthy. So it's a big test for us, and we're going to go in and throw our best game at them and see what happens.
Can you gain anything from having gone in there and won twice this year?
I think you throw regular season stuff out the window this time of year. I think it's a clean slate for everybody. And I think even from the last time we played them, we're a different team and they're a different team.
How's Joel Ward?
He's good. Maintenance day today. He's fine, yeah.
And anything on the Edo?
No, getting better every day. So we'll see. It's day to day. We'll see how he feels tomorrow and make some decisions.
Facing a 40-goal scorer on that other side, how do you deal with that, and what makes him so good?
Well, obviously, Tarasenko's a special talent, and you have to be aware of him. But you know, we'd be making a mistake by just focusing on him. You know, I think their forward group is as deep as any in the league, and you know, arguably their best line last series was Stastny, Brouwer, and who else was on that line? Fabry, who's got you know, was a young kid with 10 points already. So they're a deep, deep team, and you know, we're going to be aware of Tarasenko, but we can't make the mistake of focusing on him because they've got a lot of other weapons there that can burn you.
Think about the goaltender matchup in this series. I mean, obviously, Elliott's had a great year.
I mean, our guys had a great year. You know, the goaltending can't get any tougher than it's been for us going through Quick and Rene. So we got a lot of respect for Elliott. We know he's good, but, you know, we've faced very good goalies in the first two rounds too.
So we've heard four audio clips from their coaches and the players of the Sharks and the Blues, and the theme's the same. I think they both respect each other. I think they know this is going to be a tough series. I think they understand who's hot for each team and who they need to watch. Fans, please enjoy this series. It's going to be a great one, and I'm going to make a prediction. And I know the Blues fans are sick of going to seven games, but I don't see this going any less than six, and I'm really expecting seven games between these two teams. It's going to be a hard-fought series, and I think it's going to be one in the corners. It's going to be whoever can get the most pressure on in the opposite team's zone is going to win this game. That will allow the defensemen to reach up a little bit and come into play and be part of the play, such as Burns and Shattenkirk and Parayko for the Blues. And I think that's going to ultimately be the deciding factor. The defense, how much they can get involved in the play, and also the goaltending. You know, Jones and Elliott are almost matched perfectly, you know, their stats for the playoffs. If you're a Blues fan, you love Elliott. If you're a Sharks fan, you've watched him this playoffs and noticed, you know, he's played very well. That's just the way it's going to be. I want to thank everybody for joining me on the Drop Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Lance Descott. This has been an unbiased preview of the Sharks-Blues third-round series in the Western Conference, and the team will be, whoever wins this, will be moving on to the Stanley Cup, which would be awesome for the Blues, and I'm sure the Sharks fan would love to see that too. There can only be one winner in this, and we'll find out who that's going to be. Please follow the Drop Podcast on Facebook at facebook.com, / The Drop Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at @OfficialTheDrop. You can also email us at theofficialdrop@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. I know it was a long show, but I hope everybody enjoyed it. Have a great day. As fans of both teams, let's have a great series. Good night.
If it hadn't been for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? If it hadn't been for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?